If it's a Monday morning and it's right around 7:30, 7:32, it's time for us to have our conversation with Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven. It's always nice to welcome Arthur in on a Monday morning, a great way to start the week. Arthur, good morning and happy Monday.
Is it happy?
Well, wait, for me it is. It's warm.
Oh, yeah, well, that's right. You like the heat. Yeah. Well, it's just murderously humid here, you know, on the verge of raining for the rest of the day. So I was thinking this morning, what do I make on a, what do I cook, you know, on a rainy, humid day? And the answer is nothing. I already made something from yesterday. So we're going to have, I guess we're going to have a salad plate for lunch today, a big salad plate. I already made the yogurt with cucumber and mint. So my hint to this, if you want to make it ahead, which I always do, I always make enough that there is going to be leftovers in any case, is you have to drain the cucumbers. They happen to be a very good buy at the farmer's market on Saturday, so I couldn't resist. I bought three big ones, your normal salad cucumbers, and I peeled them with my handy swivel-bladed vegetable peeler, which I realized the other day is used so much that it's time to get a new one. And they do have them, by the way, they do make them with the exchangeable blades. I used to have one of those, and I think somebody walked off with it because it was so nice. Anyway, I still have a blade in the drawer. And in any case, you peel them, and then you have to seed them. Because the middle part there with all the seeds is also very juicy. It's just going to make the whole thing watery. So I take a teaspoon, and I scrape down the middle of each cucumber half. Now, this is the hard part. If you do it by hand the way I do, you've got to grate the cucumbers, and I use my box grater. I have an excellent, very sharp box grater, but still, a floppy cucumber without its seeds is not an easy thing to grate. You could do this in your food processor with the grating blade. Don't do chop. Do the grating blade. And once that's all done, it will create even more water. So I squeeze out the cucumber before I start adding yogurt. By the way, a lot of recipes you'll consult tell you to salt the cucumber, which in fact will, of course, make the cucumbers exude even more liquid. But I don't want to salt it. I'm going to add salt. I've made this had the error of it really being too salty. And the fact is, if you squeeze it out by handfuls, you're getting most of the moisture. So I put that in a bowl. For those three cucumbers, I used a cup of Greek yogurt. And I use Greek yogurt here because the cucumbers will, in fact, offer their... mostly water after all anyway, and it'll thin out the yogurt a bit. If you're using regular yogurt, you know, not the strained Greek kind, then you have to eat that the same day. Let's put it that way. That's it, and I grate in a large clove of garlic, had a few pinches of dried mint, and I didn't have any fresh herb in the house. There is mint growing next to my building here, but I've decided not to trust it. Maybe I should. I don't know. I have to ask my neighbor who makes mojitos with it what he thinks. So we have a lot of mint. So that's it. That's going to be the main event probably of my cold meal today. But I've been cooking like crazy the last week. I only realized this morning when I made a list of the stuff that I've done in the past week to see what I could talk about today. Let me start. Yeah, well, I did already start with cold, you know, cucumber. Oh, by the way, in Greek it would be called tzatziki, and in Turkish it would be called tzatzik, and it can be a soup too. I sometimes like this, the cucumber and yogurt dish, thinned out with a little bit of buttermilk if I happen to have it, or other dairy product, just to make it spoonable like a soup. Anyway, I made again another spoon bread. This is my spoon bread update. Last week I talked about how I made one that I ran across on the internet for the King's Arms Tavern. That's a restaurant in Colonial Williamsburg their spoon bread. And that was the first spoon that introduced me to spoon bread. I don't know how old I was, but I was maybe 12. And we went as a family to Colonial Williamsburg, a great family vacation, I got to say. I've been back since as an adult. And I've always I've always loved spoon bread. From that moment on, you don't want me to sing, but that's a song, from that moment on. Anyway, I found this recipe, I made it, it was okay, I don't think that's what I fell in love with when I was a kid. And then I made another one from Natalie Dupree's Mastering the Art of Southern Cooking. That was a disaster, gotta say. I knew right away when I read it even that it was not gonna work because it had way too much liquid. And then I remembered, I actually have a recipe for spoon bread in my very first cookbook, 1978. So that's 40 years ago. I was making spoon bread then as a regular thing, if I remember. And I served it in, and I mentioned this last week, then I served it in a menu with a ham steak, hard thing to find these days, these thick, thick center cuts of cured ham. A ham steak baked in milk, which always reminds me of, you know, the northern Italian pork roast cooked in milk. So there's I got to find out what the thing is with milk and pork. Of course, not kosher. But there's got to be something historical about that combination. Anyway, I said it last week. I made this menu to show off. A wine that I wanted to show off to my friends across the street who were wine writers. Anyway, I made my spoon bread this week, and you know what? Of the three, the recipe was the best by far. It was exactly what I wanted it to be, which is, of course, why I had that recipe in my book. The only problem with the recipe, and by the way, with the other two as well, is that 30 minutes in a 375 oven, which is what I had, was not quite enough. It did brown on the top, but not badly. The difference between my recipe and the other two that I made is that mine had a small quantity of flour. It was a cup of cornmeal softened in 2 cups of boiling water. You know, this is not supposed to be a super rich thing, but it has become. Somebody pointed out to me that there was a recent recipe in the New York Times for spoon bread, and I looked up the recipe, and as my dear departed friend Suzanne Hamlin would say, a great recipe if you leave off the last 7 ingredients. Anyway, but I made mine. It's in my book, Cooking in a Small Kitchen, and it's which was republished 2 years ago by Macmillan as part of a classic cookbook series. So I won't bore you with the details, but that turned out pretty good. Next time I'm going to make it in a 350-degree oven and cook it for 10 minutes longer, which would be 40 minutes. Now, I am obsessed with red cabbage. I don't know why. Got into my head. I decided to make it easy on myself, and I have been searching now for months for a red cabbage in a jar that I remember buying years ago that was very good. Well, I can't find it. Do you know about this, Marshall?
I know about red cabbage in a jar. You just jarred my memory. I'm trying to think back to it now.
Yeah, I can't find it anyway. So I did last week. I think I reported this. I bought maybe I didn't. I bought a head of, I broke the head, I'm going to have to do this myself. So I bought a head of red cabbage, and I have to say, my braised red cabbage, German style, very simple, very, very simple, was sensational, and it was a 2-pound head of cabbage, and Bob and I ate the whole pot full. So I'm going to make it again today, even though I have to keep the stove on for an hour and a half. But I have a 3-pound head of cabbage, so, and that seems to be more the typical size. So I'm going to give you a recipe for a 3-pound head of cabbage. First thing you got to do is shred the cabbage. Now, I have looked up a lot of other people's recipes, and other people's recipes are pretty much the same as what I instinctively was going to do. Well, I used to cook red cabbage years ago, and I haven't in a long time. But you don't have to bother shredding it finely on a mandolin or or in the food processor. I'd like to do it by hand. It's something that gives me pleasure. I cut the cabbage into quarters, and each quarter I shred as finely as possible with my chef's knife and put that all in a colander and rinse it good. Now, it's clean. It really is clean. I guess, you know, if you're kosher, you have to soak everything to make sure that there are no bugs inside. And I don't do that. I know Italians, by the way, who do that. And I always joke with any Italian home cook that I encounter who says, well, first you have to soak the broccoli for an hour in water. I said, do you have any Jewish heritage? Because that's a real giveaway. In any case, I do it because I want some water to cling to the leaves as well to cook the cabbage. So in a casserole, I use a cast iron, you know, enamel cast iron casserole. I saute an onion for a 3-pound head of cabbage, a medium onion, 6-7 ounce onion is plenty. Could be smaller even. I like to slice the onion, but you can dice the onion if you want. And saute it in, and the first time I made it in plain old vegetable oil, a couple tablespoons of vegetable oil. However, today, because I have some bacon fat in the house, I'm going to do it in a few tablespoons of bacon fat, which will give it a little extra flavor. Saute the onion until it's tender. Put in all your rinsed cabbage. Cover the pot. Now here's something I'm going to change today. You know how nice, rich, purple red cabbage can be? It depends on a couple, the color depends on a number of things, one of which is the pH of the soil, the acidity the acidity of the soil that it's grown in. But also, if you cook it without some acid, namely vinegar, it will, in fact, be bluer than it will be purple. That rich color can be brought out with some vinegar. So last time, my color was great, but I think I can make it even greater. I'm going to add the vinegar from the beginning. So as soon as I put the shredded cabbage in the pot, and I toss it, I like to, by the way, whenever I do this, even with green cabbage, and I do braise green cabbage a lot, I add it little by little, tossing it with the onion and the fat as I go along. So by the time you're adding the last measure of shredded cabbage, most of what's in the pot has already been coated with a little bit of fat. Cover the pot. Put on, for a 3-pound head of cabbage, I'm going to use 3 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar. And put it over a medium flame, cover the pot, and as soon as the cabbage wilts down a bit, add, I'm going to use applesauce. Bob Harned is into applesauce, and as a result, he has, I don't even know what to call it, he has hoarded applesauce. So I don't have apples in the house in general, high carb fruit. We eat low-carb fruits, lower, I should say. So we have an excess of applesauce. So I'm using 2 of those little containers. That's what he buys. I think I have to look. I'm going to say it's a 1/2 cup altogether of applesauce, unsweetened applesauce. Last time I made it with what we had, which he accidentally bought, which was the sweetened kind of applesauce. And, you know, the cabbage was fine. It was terrific. I added a little extra vinegar just to counteract the sweetness. But today I'm going to make it with totally unsweetened applesauce. If you don't have applesauce, you know, an apple is good. In 3 pounds of cabbage, I would use 2 medium apples even. The tartar, the better. Anyway, that's it. You let it, and salt. I used about, I'm going to say, a teaspoon for a 3-pound head of cabbage, a teaspoon of salt. And toss it around, cover the pot, let it steam. It's going to take, eventually, the enough moisture will accumulate so that it's going to be perking away there. Don't let it cook too violently. You just want to slow cook. and you want to toss it around every 15, 20 minutes. And you cook it for an hour and 20 minutes, an hour and a half. It is divine. Can I say? As I already said, Bob and I ate the whole thing. 3-pound head, I hope we're going to have leftovers. Now, the thing is, what do you eat red cabbage with? It goes best with pork things. So I don't know what to say. I did buy pork chops last week, and we had some really good pork chops with the red cabbage. Any kind of German-style sausage is very good. Bratwurst and red cabbage, delicious. So it's, I don't know. You know, I'm thinking about maybe making a red cabbage soup. Then again, we like to eat the same. When we are enjoying something, we really like to eat it a few times before we get tired of it. I'm not getting tired of spinach, which is in my farmer's market for the last month. And every Saturday, I buy a large amount of spinach and cook it off. And the already cooked spinach lasts in the refrigerator, squeezed out and everything, for several days. So you can make several different spinach things. I do, starting on Sunday. So to cook spinach, most people will, you know, I read cookbooks all the time, and, you know, the basic spinach thing is throw it into some boiling water. Some people will do the steam thing, but with the pot covered, meaning they put the spinach that's been well washed. I wash my spinach 3 times. It depends. Mostly I've been getting relatively clean spinach. If it's sandy spinach, meaning usually if it's still on its root, sometimes they just pull it up, root and all, that spinach usually needs more washing. So I put it in my biggest pot, which is a 7-quart pot, with cold water. I take off all the really tough stems, but I leave on the tender stems. Don't bother doing anything with that. And then once they're in the pot, whoosh it around with your hand, and the sand should fall to the bottom. I let it sit for a couple minutes, and then I lift off the spinach from the top with my hand like claws and put it into a colander. Do that 3 times. The 3rd time, the water that you're throwing away should be pretty clear. It won't have any sand in it. And I put the washed spinach back in the 7-quart pot without any water, without anything, well drained in the colander. And with tongs, I turn it over. You know, I don't use my most powerful burner, my second most powerful burner, and I put it on high. And if you keep turning the spinach with the tongs, it will within a few minutes, really wilt very, very well. And when it's fully wilted, that's it. I let it cool in the pot until it's cool enough to handle. And then I put it with the tongs, I lift it out of the pot, leaving all the liquid behind, and I put it in a bowl, and I tilt the bowl to let more liquid drain off. And then before I put it away, I squeeze it out by handfuls and to make sure it's really well drained. And you can do a lot of things with that. My most basic thing is just to saute it in olive oil with garlic and hot pepper, if I'm allowed that day. I love hot pepper in my spinach. Salt, you got to put a good amount of salt in there. I mean, that's my plainest, most one. But you can use butter instead of olive oil. That's a great taste. In fact, this past week, I made the second time I made the spinach, I did saute it in butter, and then I added a little bit. What I did was I made a little roux, a tablespoon of butter, a tablespoon of flour, let it simmer a little bit, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, bubbling in the pot. And then I added a diced shallot, and then I added and let that cook a couple minutes. And then I added my cooked already spinach and tossed it in all that. And then I added, I guess it was about a cup of half and half, and let that all come to a simmer and get thickened. And it's really a nice, thick, creamed spinach. If you want to eat it just like that, go ahead. It's great. Salt, pepper, a little gratings of nutmeg, very good with spinach, nutmeg. And but we didn't need it as plain old cream spinach. I put it into little casseroles, made an indentation with the back of a spoon, and broke eggs into the indentations, two eggs per casserole. And that was dinner. I must say, very good dinner. Oh, we put grated cheese on top of that. If you don't have, nice Parmigiano, I happen to have a good stock of very good Parmigiano, so I'm using it a lot the last few days, and it was good there. But, even some grated cheddar would be one, and let it melt on top of the eggs. And you can cook the eggs either runny, which is doesn't take more than 10 minutes, or a little bit firmer, which could be 12 or 14 minutes. I think I do the 12 to 14 minutes only because Bob doesn't really want a super runny egg. Even less would be good, too. And also, you could make a bed of cream spinach and just put a fried egg on top. That's really good. In a bowl, and you don't have to turn the oven on. It's all on the stovetop. So that was my spinach. And then I did mention last week that when, it's a quirk of mine, when I eat something in a restaurant that's not quite up to snuff, I've got to go home and make it the way I like it. So I did that with this Palestinian dish called moussakan. I reported that we went to this Palestinian restaurant, Al Balwadi, on Atlantic Avenue. It was a hideous experience. The food was okay, nothing special, I thought. I could do better, and I did. But the noise was unbearable. It bills itself as a family restaurant, so hence, there were no families in there, by the way, on a Tuesday night. They were all, 20 and 30-somethings who live in Brooklyn Heights in these new high-rise towers. Anyway, I came home, and I had to make moussakan my way. And the big question with moussakan when you make it at home is what bread to use, because it's basically a dish of chicken, onions cooked with sumac, which is a spice, you'd say, that has a sort of lemony edge to it. It's not spicy. It's more acidic, lemony, than anything. And by the way, our roads in Northwest Connecticut and New York are lined with sumac. And I have actually harvested it. It's the tree with the red candles in the fall. I say candles of these spikes with a fluffy, sort of fuzzy red thing at the end. Well, I actually made spice / sumac from those, but it's not anywhere near as good, not nowhere close to good, as what you can buy in a Middle Eastern grocery coming from wherever in the Mediterranean. So, that's the dish. Chicken, onions, and sumac, and it goes on bread. So the bread is the issue. So I go to this, gosh, more than one market, and I finally remember that sandwich wraps. Do you ever eat wraps? Got to say, I never eat a wrap.
Occasionally, but they would not, they're
not
my favorite.
I'd rather have bread.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, years ago, I did a little bit of homework on this and discovered that wraps are no fewer calories or any better for you than sandwich bread, depending on the bread, of course, depending on the wrap. But there was a wrap in my supermarket with a Middle Eastern family name as the brand. And I thought, well, this is lavash. I'd forgotten that lavash, the Middle Eastern flatbread, has evolved into wraps. And of course, if you sold a wrap thing, I don't even know what to call it, a wrap flatbread, as lavash, nobody would buy it except the Middle Easterner who might know what it is. And then again, it's very particular to Palestine, Jordan, Israel. Anyway, lavash has become wrap bread. So I bought the wrap bread. And the first time I ate it, what I did was I put it out to dry it out a little bit, which happens almost immediately. Got to say, it comes in a resealable plastic bag for a reason. And but I put them out on a baking sheet, two of these, and within an hour they were already crinkling up, getting drier. And I wanted them dry because I wanted them to soak up a little bit of the broth that I had from cooking the chicken. How I cooked the chicken is I had four chicken thighs in a deep pan, just barely covered with water, plain old tap water, and a crushed with the heel of my hand, crushed, not crushed through a garlic press, a clove of garlic, a cracked clove of garlic. And I I put the chicken in cold water, and I put it on a medium-high flame, and as soon as it started simmering, I lowered the flame. I let it cook very, very slowly. I turned the chicken a couple of times so that it would cook evenly, bottom and top. It took about a half an hour, even starting it in cold water. And the result is some really good poached chicken. By the way, on the bone, with the skin, you could do this with boneless, but it's not going to be as good. You're going to throw away the skin, but it did add fat and juiciness to your chicken in the meantime. And cooking on the bone is always juicier than cooking off the bone. So now you have, I let the chicken come to room temperature, or at least handleable temperature. I stripped it off the bones, threw away the skin, ended up with 2 cups of really, really flavorful, delicious broth. And I used about 3 tablespoons on each of these sheets of lavash, this flatbread. And then I put on my chicken, which now in pieces, or, you know, big as I could get them, stripping it off the bone. If there's some small ones, no problem. I had sauteed 3 medium onions, about 3 cups of sliced onion. I sauteed it in about 2 or 3 tablespoons of olive oil. And until they were, I would say, almost tender. And then I sprinkled that with a teaspoon of salt and 3 tablespoons of sumac, which, by the way, I just bought at the supermarket. And so it's particularly fresh. And even though the package says it's good for another 2 years, I don't think so. If you have sumac and it's more than a year old, I would consider buying more sumac. It is definitely more aggressive. It's not an aggressive spice, but it's more aggressive when it's fresh, more fragrant, more tasty when it's fresh than when it's a year or more old. I know from experience. But if you have the older sumac, you can just use a little more. In fact, I used 2 tablespoons to start. And then at the end, I decided it wasn't sumac-y enough. So I added another tablespoon, which I let sauté with the onions just for another couple minutes, and that was that. Now, I spread this, and what I did was, in this case, this was for 2 people, so we each were going to get the meat from 2 chicken thighs, and I just decided to toss it with the onions and the sumac and let it heat through a little bit and put it on top of the doused bread and then stuck that under the broiler. Put on top, and I did get this from the idea from the restaurant, chopped almonds. I didn't have any, like, you know, cooking kind of almonds around, so I went into my deluxe mix box and fetched out 1/4 cup of salted almonds and stuck this all under the broiler just for literally a minute, because the bread gets very crispy and even burned on the edges. I like the burn part, by the way. But now I'm thinking, you know, I'm back on keto. You don't know this, but I'm back on my ketogenic diet, which means no carbs, no serious carbs. I can have I decided onions are okay, even though they're a high-carb vegetable. You know, I can't cook without onions. So onions are okay. Chicken is perfect. The almonds are perfect. And the final garnish on this should be a drizzle of yogurt, either, you know, just plain regular yogurt beaten up a little bit with a fork so that it gets looser, or Greek yogurt, which you can thin out with a little bit of water, and just because you don't want clumps of yogurt. I don't, anyway. Anyway, this was a really great dish, but next time I'm making it without the bread. After we finished off this flatbread, this wraps bread, which used to be called lavash, I decided I did not like this brand at all. I read the ingredients, and I didn't like the there was just too many chemical ingredients in this when it should be nothing but, you know, real lavash is made with yeast. This so-called wraps bread was made with baking powder. You know, and piadina, for instance, in Italy is a flatbread that's made with baking powder. But I'm not against baking powder, but I was against all the chemicals. Now I'm not going to even search for another bread to do. But next time I want to do this with bread, I'm going to get pita bread from a Middle Eastern restaurant in my neighborhood. I'm sure they'll sell me just some loaves of their pita, because their pita is extremely thin and appropriate for this. And it dries out immediately, which is a good sign. That means it's only made from flour, yeast, and water. Anyway, so that's my random cooking for the week.
All right, it was random.
I did a lot of cooking this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, not only random, but a lot random.
A lot. I'm cooking every day, again. You know, I had that bad restaurant experience.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm so bored with anything I can order in, except for the cold noodles with peanut sauce from the Thai place around the corner, which I'm still craving. But I have to hold off for a while before I eat a big bowl of noodles.
All right.
Yeah, I don't know. Today, I might succumb to chickpeas.
Nothing wrong with chickpeas. Nothing wrong with chickpeas.
Yes, there is. They're high carb.
I know, but
that's what's on my diet. You know, if you want to be, I met somebody the other day, a new person, who told me, oh, he's on the keto diet, and he's lost 10 pounds in 3 weeks. I told him it's going to slow down, but anyway, he is not going off, and he realizes that you have to eat an enormous amount of fat on this diet. If you have cholesterol problems, this is probably not the diet for you. So you have to eat an enormous amount of fat. You can, of course, eat just good fats like olive oil, avocado oil, nut oils, things like that to get your fat content. But truthfully, I should not be eating like lamb chops for lunch yesterday. I had too much meat. Yes, I had a lot of spinach too, but still, it was okay, but people on this diet eat too much protein, not enough fat, and they fool themselves that certain carbohydrate foods are okay. If you're trying to keep your carbs down to 20, no, certainly no more than 50 grams a day, you have to be very, very strict about that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there's my lecture for the week. Maybe next week I'll do pasta. We'll see if I give in to this or not.
All right. Okay, Arthur, take care.
Have a great week, everyone.
Take care.
Stay cool.
All right. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, Hillsdale Home Chef. More information, 518-325-7000.